Therefore, the funding deficit that we have right here, don't want to exaggerate that. We're doing just fine, but we need to catch up on our funding. And this is how we're going to do it. Look for our podcasts on podcast directories, including Apple Podcasts. And you've been listening on KBOO.FM. And in that manner, we go out to all the ships at sea.
Coming up next on KBOO, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fogering. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein discusses the report on the FBI's systematic surveillance of activists. At 11:30, it's Between the Covers. Ken Jones interviews Leland Chuck, author of the novel No Good, Very Bad Asian. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, where author Renee Watson introduces her latest work, Some Places More Than Others. As Teresa said, don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all of your favorite KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Cause Cabaret While They Wait on Saturday, November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge in Portland. Cause Cabaret While They Wait will be an evening of performances by various singers, storytellers, comedians, and dancers from the Portland area, and will benefit those attempting to legally immigrate to the U.S. The event will host raffles, food and drink, and music, and comedy performances. Again, that's Cause Cabaret While They Wait on Saturday, November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge, 2432 Southeast 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. It's Fight the Empire. This is Per Fogering. And a lot of things to talk about today. Well, you know, the impeachment process is rolling along. And it seems to me that the proceedings against Donald Trump, they focus on one issue. Did he wrongfully pressure Ukraine into digging up dirt on a political rival? Of course, a rival was former President, Vice President Joe Biden, who was the U.S. point man in Ukraine after their so-called revolution. The pressure point was military aid to Ukraine. That was a quid in the quid pro quo. And the dirt was Biden's son Hunter getting a very well-paid seat on a gas company's board of directors. And so the narrow window was I think it's time to open up that narrow window a little bit. We will stipulate that, you know, it looks to me like Trump did indeed put pressure on Ukraine, which is a bad thing to do. And I'm sure he will get punished for it one way or another. I think he'll probably be impeached. I think he's certain to be impeached, and whether the Senate will, right now I think the Senate will probably not remove him from office because the Republicans control the Senate, but who knows, things are changing very quickly sometimes. But nevertheless, it seems to me when you look at the wider picture, Joe Biden should be investigated. You know, his situation looks very fishy, so why not check it out? And the other question is, if Trump threatening to withhold military aid to Ukraine, why were we giving that military aid in the first place? It seemed like a very dangerous game to play, and what is the purpose of it? We might recall that President Obama had refused to provide that aid. And he said that it would only escalate the bloodshed and probably end up in the hands of thugs. And we'll talk about those thugs later on, I think. The thugs are some of the neo-Nazis, right-wingers in the Ukraine government and army. But let's go back a few years, sort of put this whole thing in perspective. Back in February of 2010, it was almost 10 years ago, Viktor Yanukovych was elected president of Ukraine. Now, it was a free and fair election. It passed all the requirements. Yanukovych's support came from mainly from eastern Ukraine. His party is called the Party of Regions. And the eastern region of Ukraine is kind of pro-Russian. They're Russian-speaking people. And how they got to be part of Ukraine is an interesting story. I'm not really sure how. Ukraine has had many borders over the years. Ukraine has never been a, for most of its existence, Ukraine has never really been a nation. It's been part of some larger entity. In fact, Ukraine means borderland. And at one time, back in the Middle Ages, they were part of a Polish-Lithuanian Empire. Then they were part of the Russian Empire. Then they were part of the Soviet Union. So anyway, in February 2010, Viktor Yanukovych was elected president, with most of his support coming from eastern Ukraine. Well, the Ukrainian economy was in really in shambles. And in April of 2011, the IMF offered, it's not like one of those offers you cannot refuse, they offered a $1.5 billion loan, and along with the loan came requirements for austerity and pension cuts. Not a very attractive offer. But then a couple of years later, in 2013, Russia offered a better deal. And these are the best figures I have. If anyone has any different figures, I'd like to know. Their deal was a $15 billion in bonds and cheaper gas. Russia provides most of the gas for Ukraine. Well, right away, even though this is a better deal, you had protests that began and plans to destabilize Ukraine began back in 2013. In December of 2013, Victoria Nuland gave a talk, and she said that the U.S. had invested, that's her word, invested $5 billion and 5 years of work into doing whatever it's doing in Ukraine. Now, Victoria Nuland was the Assistant Secretary of State for European, Eastern European Affairs. Of course, her immediate boss was Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State. So she, then the next year, January of 2014, Victoria Nuland went to Kiev sort of to push for a new government. Well, they already had a government, an elected government, but Victoria Nuland was going to Kiev to kind of do some kind of regime change. And the next month, February 2014, she was out there in the streets of Kiev at the Maidan handing out cookies to these rioters and talking with Ambassador Jeffrey Pyatt over her phone conversations were tapped and recorded and played back. And one of the things they were talking about, once they got rid of Yanukovych, who would be the new ruler, and Victoria Nuland said, quote, Yats the guy. Well, Yats means Arseniy Yatsenyuk, who is one of the politicians in Ukraine. And that same month, Yanukovych even agreed to an interim government. He was willing to step down, but not right away. He wanted an interim government. The opposition said no, and the European Union began sanctions on Ukraine. Well, the violence continued in Kiev. You had these snipers, mystery snipers, because nobody's quite sure whose side they were on. They seem to be shooting people on both sides, police and protesters. There is some evidence that they were working for the opposition in Ukraine, but I don't know if that's totally proven or not. But you had the snipers in the Maidan. You had a building in Odessa. There was a protest there. This time the protesters were on the government side, and they were chased into a labor union building by the other protesters, and the building was set on fire. And a lot of people were killed in the fire or died jumping out of the building. And at that point, Yanukovych, he left town. He fled for his life. That was in February 2014. And March, entered Joe Biden. And he came to Ukraine to kind of give an attaboy to Arseniy Yatsenyuk, who, by golly, was the new president of Ukraine. And his son Hunter, got a very lucrative job on the board of the Burisma Gas Company, paying him $50,000 a month. Gee whiz, I wouldn't mind getting $50,000 a year. He got that for just sitting on a board meeting. The Burisma Company has a lot of gas wells in eastern Ukraine. At the same time, Burisma tried to get Washington to end their corruption allegations against Burisma, which in a way looks a little bit like a quid pro quo to me. Now remember that all this was going on while Barack Obama was president and Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. You have this six-year process going on to kind of put in our guy in Ukraine and moving towards some kind of confrontation with Russia. And we might have asked, what would have happened if Hillary Clinton had won the 2016 election? I would say more of the same. We would have had possibly Ukraine would be asked to join NATO, invited to join NATO, but maybe not. There's some controversy over that. But I would guess that there'd be, whether Ukraine is in NATO or not, there would be European or NATO troops on the border of Ukraine and Russia, and be very likely some kind of repression in the east, because the president that the people in the east had voted for had been forced to flee. And let's remember that he was legitimately elected. He was not imposed on anyone. But then all of a sudden, Donald Trump wins the election. This is definitely not part of the plan. One of the things that very quickly after Donald Trump was elected, I remember this quite well, Senator Chuck Schumer was interviewed, I think, by Rachel Maddow, and about what would happen. You know, Trump was making all kinds of noises about ending the war with Russia, or he was so unhinged, it's hard to say what he's saying from one day to the next, but it was shaping up to be a confrontation between Trump and the CIA. And Schumer kind of chuckled and told Rachel Maddow that the intelligence community, which means basically the CIA, they can get back at you, quote, six ways from Sunday. And he's kind of chuckling over that. Well, we can see that has been happening. And so, we kind of know what Donald Trump represents. We sort of do, because he's such an unhinged guy. He represents something. He represents himself, I suppose, his conception of himself. This is kind of a little sidelight. I read something recently that Edward Snowden said this about Trump. He said, Donald Trump is a guy who's never known love in his life. That his dealings with his parents growing up, especially with his father, were sort of always transactional. Quid pro quo, I guess. And so Trump is a guy who does not know what love is all about. It's all business dealings to him. Anyway, here's this guy in a confrontation or battle with the CIA. Well, who is the CIA? The CIA has long been dominated by Cold War liberals. I don't know if people remember Senator Henry Scoop Jackson from the state of Washington. He was sort of one of the big Cold War liberals that on domestic issues, they were very in tune with the Democratic Party. They were, very progressive-minded. And so they're liberals at home, but abroad they were out, they were very friendly to fascists abroad, and they were changing governments, and they were in a Cold War with, at that time, it was the Soviet Union. Well, they're definitely not the kind of people that associate with Donald Trump. These CIA liberals, Cold War liberals, are generally very intelligent, soft-spoken, and they don't rant and rave and talk about themselves all the time. But you have to remember that these are the folks who got this country into many, many wars. They were called, quote, the best and the brightest. A lot of them went to Ivy League colleges, and they learned their manners, put it that way. Well, it looks to me like maybe not. Who knows? If they impeach Trump, well, they will impeach him, and then whether they remove him from office is something else. But the country is very much, if they succeed in getting Trump out of office, a lot of people in this country will be very, very angry. We might ask but after Trump is gone, whether it's by impeachment, removal, or just by being voted out of office, what next? And I would say then the CIA plan resumes. The impeachment, and you can see that the fact that the impeachment charges against Trump revolve about the Ukraine and putting pressure on the Ukrainian government, it paves the way for renewed activity after Trump is gone. I can think of several reasons to impeach Trump. One would be just the other day, the U.S. began its withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement. You also have Trump was dumping the nuclear agreement with Iran, and Iran has responded by upping its nuclear program, which is getting people alarmed. And so just dumping those two agreements would be grounds for impeachment. But for some reason, the powers that be in Washington had chosen to go after Trump on this, to me, it seems like a very minor issue dealing with Ukraine. And it serves a larger purpose, I think. It gets rid of Trump. It sort of absolves Hillary Clinton from losing the election, and it leads towards some kind of action against Russia. So I would kind of guess that after Trump is gone, there'll be troops on the border of Russia, and it's a very dangerous game they're playing. I don't think that the Cold War liberals really want to get into a war. They just want to pick at Russia and try and bring Russia down without a war. But They are not as smart as they think they are. They've gotten us into wars in the past, and they may get us stumbling into another one the way they are going. So that is what I expect will happen when and if Trump is gone. Well, if anybody wants to call with their opinion on that, the number is 503-231-8187. Do you think Trump is seeing the end of his time in office? And if so, what do you think will happen afterwards? It's very interesting that a lot of people on the progressive side of things, people we know very well, think of Trump as a kind of a quasi-fascist. I don't even know if he's got his politics that well organized, but certainly a lot of his followers are. And so they think of Trump as being some kind of a fascist. Therefore, the people who are opposed to him are kind of, in their own way, they are fighting fascism. But when you look at the CIA, their record in the past, they've been installing fascist governments all around the world. And one of them, there are a lot of fascists that they helped put in power in, of all places, Ukraine. So it's, we have, Jack is on the line. Morning, Jack.
Yeah, Per, thanks for keeping this in the somewhere on the table there. the flagship station, the flagship program there, Democracy Now!, is really, really in with the Russiagate thing. And so I'm glad you're keeping a contrary point of view on the table there. As far as Trump goes, unfortunately, looks like some kind of a wannabe oligarch to me. He never quite got in with the real big players, but where he really wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
But his megalomania took him to a presidential campaign, and surprisingly, he won it. And if you look at some of the voices that are contrary to most of the mainstream and alternate and alt media mainstream, even they're basically calling him the guy who the intelligence insider white hats, they just went to him because there was nobody else to go, nobody else that they could support that was contrary to the security state. And I don't know if you follow any of those guys or not. There's a couple of big names. They got pretty good following. Dr. Steve Pachinik, if you know who he is.
No, I don't.
Okay, well, he was an insider. He was involved in a lot of the regime change operations during the Reagan years. He was involved in the hostage negotiations in Iran. You can look him up. He's easy to look up. Mm-hmm. P-I-E-C-Z.
Anyway, why don't you kind of finish up, because I do have another call awaiting.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's also David Robert Steele, and basically these guys are what they're claiming is that a coterie of white hats on the inside has countered the CIA's efforts to take him out, and there's basically a faction war going on within the intelligence agencies, and that's pretty much what it is. Mm-hmm. And whoever's going to come out on top, it's hard to say, but that's pretty much the way these guys see it, and it makes sense to me. So,
well, that's very interesting. Thanks for that information. Okay, well, thank you. I think that, some of the people in the intelligence community, they're not Cold War liberals so much as I think of guys, I can't think of the names right now, but there's some real right-wingers there, too. They're not all Scoop Jackson liberals, put it that way. So maybe they are having it out. But we have, I think, Marco on the line. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is Michael.
Michael, okay.
Listen, I really like your show. I think
you.
You're one of the most informed I've heard on the subject just about anywhere. But anyway, I wanted to let people know about a wonderful documentary by Oliver Stone called Ukraine on Fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available. And it shows the entire inside story of the coup, who did it, who was the point man on it, which was Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And it also will show people just the kind of people that we are defending here. It's really a crime that we're supporting these people. They're outright Nazis.
Well, very interesting. I was going to bring this up. You know, part of the Ukrainian military is a group called the Azov Battalion.
Azov. Yeah.
And they are they started out to be some kind of a militia, but they've been incorporated into the Ukrainian military. And they are very right-wing. They have used Nazi-type symbols for their flags and everything. And
right,
apparently
right.
There's a group here, a right-wing group here. They have people going to Ukraine and getting kind of trained by these Azov people and then coming back here and doing their street fighting thing. There
great.
Was three of them were put on trial down in Southern California last year, and
uh-huh.
it's a group called the Rise Above Movement.
Oh, yeah, that's in the documentary.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very interesting.
I highly recommend that documentary.
Mm-hmm.
People
yes.
need to see that because, like I say, it shows the kind of people that we're going to send military aid to,
mm-hmm.
and it's an outright crime that we would even consider that, to be mm-hmm. honest.
Well, this Rise Above movement, they're kind of like a fighting club with a very extreme right-wing politics, and apparently they've been sending guys over there to meet up with the Azov Battalion people and coming back here. So it's something to think about. Anyway.
Well, watch that documentary, and it was good talking to you.
Okay, thank you for your call. Well, we got a few minutes left. If anyone wants to call 503-231-8187. I think check out that movie. Oliver Stone has made some really good movies lately, and in fact, I think one time we had him as a guest. He and a historian did a film about history or something like that, and we had him on the show. But anyway. This battle between the CIA and Trump is certainly not over yet. It's going to keep on going. And my big worry is that when and if Trump is removed from office, unless Bernie Sanders or a progressive Democrat takes over, if it's if it's anybody else, I think that the U.S. will resume its kind of little aggressions against Russia. You know, some people think of Russia as being aggressive, but you look at a map and you see who has troops where, on whose borders, who has bases where, who has got the huge military budget, which, by the way, is killing this country. Think of all the things at home we could be spending money on rather than close to $1 trillion a year on war. But anyway, there we are with these warriors with $1 trillion a year to spend are they'll be back at their old tricks, and there's really who is standing up against them, who is there to stop them? That's a good question. Well, time to end this show. Thank you for listening and calling, and stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59. Coming up next on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein discusses the recent report on the FBI's systematic surveillance of activists and progressives. At 11, it's Between the Covers. Ken Jones interviews Leland Chuck, author of the novel No Good, Very Bad Asian. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, where author Renee Watson introduces her latest work, Some Places More Than Others. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host the screening of Can You Dig This? On Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater.
To change the community, you have to change the composition of the soil. We are the soil.
If this plant can die and it grows back in a bad environment in a city like this, then for sure I know I can fall and get back up and do the same thing.
I put a carrot in the ground and all hell broke loose.
Again, that's Can You Dig This? On Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.